And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, March 28, 2023. One person was killed and three others injured during a land dispute in Lagos State capital, Rumbek.
Yeah, one person was killed and two are injured. It is just that when they was getting this stone and the sticks and they started fighting with these army soldiers.
And health officials in Jonglei State say myths are preventing some residents from getting COVID-19 vaccines.
The way it is quoted in the Bible, it is written 36. South Sudan hotline for COVID, actually, it was chosen by South Sudan without their knowledge knowing that to have an effect.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. One person was killed and three others wounded today in a land dispute in Lagos State capital, Rumbek. A local civil society activist says clashes broke out after some residents of Rumbek town resisted a move by the government to demolish their homes allegedly built on a land belonging to a school. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar has been following the aftermath of the clashes and reports from Bor.
Reached by phone from Rumbek, Lagos State Information Minister William Skoji says government deployed security forces this morning to demolish homes around Rumbek National Secondary School. But the demolition was halted when civilians began throwing objects at the security forces.
The ongoing demolition angered some people whom their house were demolished, and they start throwing stones, sticks, and coming in big numbers toward the security forces who were tasked with the responsibility of guiding and protecting those at the site.
Lagos State Police Inspector Lieutenant Colonel Moses Machoch says the confrontation forced police to shoot bullets in the air and on the ground, which left one person dead.
Yeah, one person was killed and two are injured. It is just that when they was getting these stones and the sticks and they started fighting with these army soldiers, that's where the shooting started. There is a committee for that investigation will be conducted, and then the investigation will find out who will be responsible for that person, even those who are wounded.
The wounded were taken to Rumbek State Hospital, where they were treated for gunshot wounds. One resident was shot on the mouth, another was shot in the stomach, and a third person was shot in the leg. Daniel Lart, state coordinator for the civil society group Community Empowerment and Progress Organization, says security forces shot unarmed civilians while some residents where homes were being demolished have been arrested. He says the government gave residents only one day's notice their homes would be destroyed.
The notice was very short. It was only yesterday. This is when some of the family members were informed that this land belonged to the school and we need to demolish this area. And they started this morning, you know. The reason is not really known yet, but if it is that this land belonged to the school, the area for the school has already been demolished, and this area also, the government claim it also belonged to the school.
Koji says the decision to demolish homes in the area follows a peace conference held in Juba, and the move received approval from the state's Council of Ministers for execution.
They were informed earlier, 6 months ago, even those buildings were marked, and they could not have interest of looking for new places, rather going back to their original places. So they insist to remain there. Otherwise, it is their right. If they don't have land, they would have to seek new places peacefully, and the government is ready to allow them a new land.
Rumbek resident Tienke Riel says his house was demolished this morning.
Some of the items that were out, two computers inside my room, and 6x6 bait, and other things. I didn't remove anything there, man.
Riel says the government surprised him by showing up with bulldozers this morning without any notice.
There were some houses that were marked to be demolished. And there were the other houses, including my house, wasn't part of the houses to be demolished. We only got the information in the morning that your houses as well has to be demolished. And we are not informed, just like the other guys who were informed.
Police Inspector Machoch says the demolition was halted temporarily. Security forces have cordoned off the area to prevent further violence. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Khartoum, where Sudanese parties are wrapping up work on a draft final agreement expected to be signed April 1st. The draft agreement released this week gives the prime minister full powers over a civilian-led transitional government and gives ceremonial powers to the head of a state. Michael Atit has details for VOA from Khartoum.
The first draft of the final agreement sets a two-year transitional government to be chaired by a prime minister chosen by civilian leaders. The agreement also mandates the appointment of 26 ministers by the prime minister. Regional and state governors shall be appointed in consultation with the leaders of the revolution. Members of the chamber, which will control government, should not be less than 160, but not exceed 300 appointed representatives. The Legislative Council has the power to overthrow the transitional government with a vote of no confidence, approved by 80% of its members. Khaled Omar Youssef, official spokesperson for the political process, told reporters in Khartoum Sunday the draft was part of discussions at a workshop held earlier this month.
The drafting committee used the draft resolution of the four conferences as the basis for drafting the final draft agreement, which reflects the opinion of more than 3,000 participants who were drawn from all thoughts of life in Sudan. They only changed the language of the resolutions into the language of the agreement.
Under the draft agreement, military and civilian leaders identified five key issues: dismantling elements of former President Omar al-Bashir's government, transitional justice, and security reforms. Parties are expected to submit resolutions on security reforms by tomorrow. Youssef said resolutions on security reforms will be added to the final agreement before April the 1st.
The parties agreed to finish drafting the final political agreement on March 29th. It is the same date that they will receive the resolution on the army and security reforms workshop and to be added to the draft agreement.
Some signatories to the Juba peace deal have refused to join the political process after rejecting the framework agreement. Mohamed Zakaria is a spokesman for a group calling itself Democratic Bloc. He tells this program that his group has engaged in several meetings with military and civilian leaders to reach a consensus on some issues before they join the political process.
We met with the chairman of the Supreme Council, Al-Burhan, and his deputy, and we agreed on many of these issues, and we now have a draft that is accepted by both parties.
The signatories to the framework agreement are expected to sign a final agreement on April 1st, a transitional constitution on April 6th, and appoint a civilian government on April 11th, which will mark the beginning of a transitional period for another 2 years. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum.
A South Sudanese woman who grew up in Kakuma refugee camp has recently been appointed a UNHCR Goodwill Ambassador. Her story has inspired many refugees who fled their countries due to conflict. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Mary Maker fled Sudan during the 21-year civil war, which led to South Sudan's independence. Maker says she has vivid memories of growing up in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya.
I remember many children, lots of us, literally in that tiny classroom, all of us confused on this new environment that we are about to venture. I remember being taught how to write my name on sand and having to watch other kids do it, and I really want to do it too. I remember singing nursery rhymes, both in Arabic and in Swahili and in English, and we all don't understand this new language that is being taught to us.
Earlier this month, the UNHCR High Commissioner for Refugees appointed Maker as the new UNHCR Goodwill Ambassador. An official post-nominal horrific title are assigned to those goodwill ambassadors and advocates who are designated by the United Nations. She says her appointment gives her the chance to speak for many voiceless and refugees in the world who have lost the hope.
And I really want refugees and South Sudanese refugees to know that they're not alone, that I see them, that that they have somebody to speak up for themselves, but they also have the power within themselves to speak for themselves, you know, to become themselves again.
Despite being faced with several challenges, including a lack of housing and food, as a young refugee, Maker beat the odds and began teaching refugee children after finishing secondary school at the Kakuma refugee camp. She says working as a teacher caught the eyes of many, including the refugee agency, UNHCR, which led to her appointment as UNHCR Goodwill Ambassador. Speaking via a messaging app from the United States, Maker tells South Sudan in Focus how being a UNHCR Goodwill Ambassador means a lot to her.
I really hope to achieve a platform where refugees are able to tell their stories and be able to be creative, you know, design things, do fashion, and literally invest in themselves. I'm hoping to create a space where refugees and investors can find each other and see themselves, be it like talent agents, you know, designers or things like that. I'm big on arts, so I really want to create that space.
Maker says she wants to reduce the challenges many refugees face, including immigration, documentation, and racism. She says she plans to help refugees become economically independent.
I know UNHCR work with World Food Program to be able to provide food, but most of it is not enough. So how are we able to help refugees farm, refugees create their own products and become their own self, refugees start businesses that will help them become financially stable?
Maker, who studies literature and theater as part of a scholarship program at a university in the United States, says education is an essential tool for rebuilding lives and empowering a generation of refugee children, especially some girls who are denied access to quality education. UNHCR says at least 3.2 million South Sudanese refugees are being hosted in neighboring countries due to instability in the country. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials in Jonglei State say very few people are turning up for COVID-19 vaccines. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is wealth an important factor when making marriage decisions?
Wealth is not an important factor when making marriage decisions, because most wealth is best acquired when you're together as a couple.
Of course, I think that any decision that involves another person, that's only fair to include wealth as an important thing. Like, I can live on almost no money, but I couldn't expect my wife or my children to.
Not wealth, but security, financial security. Because if you're planning to have kids, then you need to provide for them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Health officials in South Sudan's Jonglei state say some South Sudanese still believe in myths and refuse to get COVID-19 vaccines. The officials say more people could prevent the spread of COVID-19 by turning up for vaccinations. For VOA News, Viola Elias has more from Juba.
Akech Kolakech, manager of Jonglei's expanded program on immunization, says among the myths some people believe South Sudan's hotline number 6666 for suspected COVID-19 cases is demonic. Akech says this myth stems from a misunderstood reading in the Bible's book of Revelation.
The way it is quoted in the Bible, it is written 36. South Sudan hotline for COVID, actually, it was chosen by South Sudan without their knowledge knowing that to have an effect. The last four digits were the one taken at the hotline. That was the only thing that actually people were hesitant with on the issue of COVID-19. Secondly, there's a lot of myths that people had said about COVID-19, like the issue of infertility. In the next 2 years, somebody might die.
Chapter 13 in the book of Revelation reads, and I quote, "A beast rises up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy," end quote. It further states, and I quote, "Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, end quote. Despite the myths believed by some, Akech says health workers expect to vaccinate hundreds of thousands of people during the state's vaccination campaign.
We are expecting in the Tai Jonglei state 953,170 targeted population to be vaccinated. In the last pass round and routine immunization of COVID-19, 42%, that is 460,000 in the target.
Akech says the government recently carried out an awareness campaign with the help of local chiefs and religious leaders to convince people to get vaccinated. Alier Kon Alier, a local chief of Baidit Kam in Bor, says it took the efforts of all chiefs from different communities to make sure everyone gets the shot. Alier says he got vaccinated during the first campaign to show his people that vaccine do not kill. Alier says during that campaign, less than 10 people got vaccinated in his village, compared to now when about 50 people got the shot.
In his own Boma or Binding, only 7 was vaccinated. But as we speak now, okay, in the last campaign, they vaccinated about 49. So there's actually a turn up. As I speak now, from tomorrow, many of them will be ready to be vaccinated. So there's actually a very clear importance of vaccination.
Vaccination centers are located throughout Bor town and in IDP camps. 38-year-old Deborah Ayak, who got vaccinated, says she got tired of hearing COVID announcements in her area, so she got it over with. Ayak says she used to believe someone would die 2 years after getting the vaccine.
I heard the myth from some other people that if you are vaccinated, you will be die after two years. That's why I was not coming for vaccination. Now I have been vaccinated and I am found normal. I'm going to tell them that you come for vaccination. Those who have been vaccinated ahead of us, they are still alive.
47-year-old Awul Alier says she was hesitant to get vaccinated because she did not have enough information. She says she later learned from social workers that COVID vaccine do not interfere with other medicines.
What made me to delay up to this time, it is because I am having another sickness. I take some of the medicines, that's why I'm delaying not to be vaccinated from the very first time. But now When I ask from people who are here, if they're having a problem with somebody who is taking another drug, the people have answered to me that it has nothing with any drug that you have taken.
The COVID-19 campaign is a World Bank health project aimed at a strengthening response to the pandemic. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Nairobi, where the African Union is calling for calm and political dialogue after anti-government protests in Kenya turned violent. On Monday, the police fired tear gas in Nairobi and the western city of Kisumu to disperse crowds protesting high inflation and the election win of President William Ruto last year over rival Raila Odinga. The French news agency AFP says one man was shot dead in Kisumu. At a protest last week, a university student was killed by police. The National Cohesion and Integration Commission, which was set up after the post-violence election in 2007, is also calling for dialogue as a means of moving the country forward. Journalist Fred Omulu spoke with people in Kisumu about yesterday's protests.
But the problem is, once we hit the road and people start insulting the police, attacking them in the police stations, they're also human beings, of course they will react. And if they react, people think that they are being hard on us, on the people who are protesting. Way forward is we'd love to have peaceful protest, but unfortunately we can never have one in Kenya. Because not everyone is peaceful. There are people who are just there to make chaos and to bring problems. Maybe Raila wants peaceful protests, but the people behind him, I don't think they really are doing their homework.
Brian Bodo says citizens are under pressure from the economy, but he thinks politicians need to talk.
It's about us as the citizens who are feeling the pinch and the pain. So I don't think people are acting on personal levels because of the economical issues. Yes. Yeah, Raila and Ruto should meet, they have a sit down. At least we have a way forward because times are hard. Life is hard. School fees is there. Prices of everything, commodities and all that have hiked up. So they should just meet, have a sit down. So I don't have an issue with the protest because it's us who are feeling the pinch, the pain.
Irene Oloch also thinks leaders need to sit down with each other.
Yesterday, I can say it was a bit more chaotic compared to the other time because you find so many people closed their businesses. There was a lot of back and forth in the streets between the policemen and the civilians. And there were also deaths recorded compared to the other time. So it was chaotic. Yeah, what I would propose, or what I would urge the government and the political leaders should at least have a dialogue so that things can go back to normal and people should resume their normal lives.
Mr. Odinga and other opposition groups have called for a series of protests every Monday and Thursday. For more on this story, please check out voaafrica.com. Vice President Kamala Harris on Tuesday envisioned a grand future between the U.S. and Africa, propelled by innovation on the continent. In a speech at the monument commemorating Ghana's independence from colonialism, The events on her second full day in Ghana is part of week-long trip that will include visits to Tanzania and Zambia. Douglas Mpugwa reached reporter Ken Mensah for more on the day's events.
Yes, it was a large crowd of especially young people, made up of females in particular, activists, entrepreneurs, students, as I've already mentioned, and then women in general as well. Yeah, quite an expectant crowd.
And women empowerment was one of her main topics, right?
Yes, she spoke mainly on women empowerment because for her, she believes that the time has come for Africa to give women a chance to be part of decision-making. Not just Africa, she believes that once women are empowered, it trickles down to their children, their families, their communities, and as well as the entire economy, which eventually helps to develop a nation. So she believes that once Africa shifts focus on making sure that women are given the full potential to be part of decision-making, the future of the world will look quite bright.
And a big part of her speech focused on innovation and entrepreneurship. These are popular issues in Ghana, aren't they?
Yes, over the years, I think the government, especially when it comes to its policies, aiming towards innovation, especially for the younger ones, those in the fintech area, those in the IT areas, STEM and all those areas, because they believe that these are areas that could help transform the economy when it comes to aiming towards cashless society. So I think the statement made by U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris was quite in line with the thinking of the government of Ghana. You know, our president has also been the champion of gender on the continent. So it looks as if everything look quite certain when it comes to what she is supposed to say and then how the government is supposed to work towards transforming the economy, because you can't do that without women. You can't do that without the younger ones. You can't do that without innovation. And she believes that when it comes to digital inclusion as well, you need to involve the future generation in this. And all this can never thrive when you don't have good governance and also a thriving democracy.
Talking of good governance and democracy, the choice of the venue of her speech is very important too.
Yes, the venue is quite significant because, as you know, the Independence Square signifies when Ghana attained independence in 1957. So if you look at the setting of the whole speech, it looks as if we are listening, or people, the audience, were listening to a liberation statement from a political leader. So the setting was quite planned just to let the younger ones who are listening relive that moment, and also to assure them that the future belongs to them, but they can only embrace the future if they go according to the trend. And they can only go according to the trend if they get themselves involved in innovation. And African leaders must also invest in making sure that these areas that looks to direct the future, they need to invest more into it so that people can be more creative, people can be more innovative in providing solutions to our problems.
That was reporter Ken Mensah. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpugwa from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. And that's all we prepared for you on this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song, with this Majors and the song Shen Shen. We've been listening to Disma Jos and the song Shen Shen. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We thank you for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.